This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, president, a service of KPP Financial for more than 20 years, helping Americans plan their retirement years with confidence. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday edition of InvestTalk. I appreciate you being with me today. You know, and every day, of course. This is InvestTalk. We're here to stand shoulder to shoulder with you, to help you make the best possible money decisions you can. And our 24-hour listener line is always open to ask those questions that you might have. 888-99-CHART. And we're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday on the Pacific Coast. Pacific time, okay? So we'll get to the phone calls in a second. To determine which investments are right for you, you must first familiarize yourself with the differences in different types of investments. ETFs versus mutual funds, for instance. What's the difference between those two? How do you choose which one you want to be in? That's going to be one of our talking points today. Investors are humans, and humans are emotional beings. We've mentioned this before. I know Justin's talked about it. I've talked about it. Understanding the progression of human emotion is an important skill when investing. Okay, there are four stages of market sentiment that investors cycle through over the long term. They cycle through four stages, and they are despair, disbelief, acceptance, and euphoria. During a bear market, the lows come when despair is at a peak, when everybody has given up, everybody's capitulated. And they just get out of all positions because they keep losing money and keep losing money, and they are distraught about it. Okay? Actually, that is the absolute best time for you to be a buyer. But it's very difficult to do. Very difficult. Once all the weak hands are flushed out, shares are the best prices. They really are. And that happened most recently in March of 2009. That's when the markets bottomed and turned around. Actually, the absolute bottom was March 9th. Tell you the truth, 2009, during the financial crisis. The next phase is disbelief. Once some green shoots of a rebound start to show, the jaded investors from their previous losses, not quite sure, but start to invest and start to take on a risk. They see stocks rising, the stock rising hopes begins to creep back into some optimism, starts to build a little bit. And once enough people are confident, their psyche changes and they can move to the acceptance phase. So it's despair first, okay, at the very bottom, okay? So remember, there's four phases here. Acceptance phase. This is where they accept that they have missed a lot of the rebound and they embrace the rally. When investors get a taste of big returns, they become extremely bullish and enter the euphoria phase. Okay, at some point during this phase, cash becomes scarce and new buyers run out of money, run out of ways to get in the market. And except they start maybe going on margin, which is going to be one of my talking points today, margin. You know what margin is? And I think it would be very important. Okay, so this is when the investors should begin worrying, but they don't. They don't worry about the market on the euphoria phase. They don't use it. They think it's a brand new. Think about 2000 when the dot-com market exploded up. No one worried about the dot-coms couldn't make a penny. No, none of them were making any money. No one worried about that at all. Oh, don't even think about it. I was very worried about it, but no one back then did. People were telling me this is a new paradigm that I don't understand, that I'm stupid, that, you know, the companies don't need to make money. They just need to get more and more eyeballs. Right. So why that ended. It's always, always about profits, everybody. Earnings by corporations translates into higher stock prices. It's not a perfect fit, but it has to happen. You get a company that doesn't make money. If it doesn't ever make money, it's going out of business, isn't it? Has to make money at some point. Now, you need to recognize these changes in emotions of the overall investors. It's very difficult, by the way. It's not a simple thing. You would think it would be, but it's not. Where are we now, right today? Are we in the euphoria stage? What do you think? I don't think we are. We certainly are in the acceptance stage, right? But we have to cycle through, you know, we already went through despair in 2009. Disbelief is when it, you know, that started to move up, green shoots. Then the acceptance, and then euphoria. Well, we're definitely in the acceptance phase. But are we in euphoria? Well, we might be approaching it. And this is where it's so very difficult. No one really knows. And I can't tell you. I don't know how long. And euphoria phase, but euphoria phase could last a year. It could last a long time. The timing is impossible. Makes it a fun thing to do. I really love doing what I do, but that's the difficulty. Okay, so we'll try to keep you from the edge and try to determine what phase we are in. Do you need some sorting out of your financial issues in your life? Doesn't have to be about investing, you know. Maybe you're weighing different life insurance policies. We can talk about that. I started in the insurance business. I'm ready for you at any time with any of your questions. 888-99-CHART. And so we're going to go to the phones. Let's talk to Jackie in San Rafael. How you doing, Jackie?
Hi, Steve. I want you to know I've been listening to you since you and Jerry were on the radio.
Oh, wow. So, 1999.
It was fun to listen to you.
2000, 2001. Yeah.
That long ago.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate what you've done, you and Jerry. And so I subscribe to your newsletter.
Thank you, Jackie.
Just in appreciation. My question is, I have a friend who has a REIT.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a yield of 3% and a dividend of $1.75.
Okay.
And she likes the check she gets from that dividend.
Right.
I have a REIT that is yielding almost 10%, but a dividend of 46 cents.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to me something's wrong there. Do you think she's a better stock picker?
Not necessarily. Remember, yield and dividend. Dividend is the actual amount of money. You're getting 46 cents. She's getting over a dollar, right?
$1.75.
Yeah. So that's the dividend. Yield is a percentage. What is the percentage of that dividend on the stock price? So you have a much lower stock price in your REIT than she has in, well, lower or higher? It depends. Let's see. So, because it's a percentage. You're getting 10%. Let's say you're getting 10%. So therefore, and it's 46 cents. That's for your REIT's what? $4.60? That's the price of your REIT? What is the price of your REIT?
Well, let's see. My REIT is ARI.
ARI. I can pull that up real fast.
I know it isn't that.
It's $18.72, and I have you as a 9.8% dividend yield. Oh, so you're talking about your quarterly. Yours is a quarterly dividend, right?
Hers is Essex, E-S-S.
E-S-S or F-F? Is Frank Frank or Sam Sam?
Essex, E-S-S, two S's.
Okay, Essex. Let me see if I can put it. I got E-S-X, E-S-S. I'm not seeing that E-S-S, but I'm coming up.
E-Sam-Sam.
Okay, ESS is Essex Property Trust. Okay, that's a REIT that owns it. And she's getting 3% of her on hers on a $230 stock. You see the difference? Her stock costs $230 a share. Yours is $18.
So, yeah, but she likes the check she's getting. It's like a salary.
Well, exactly. She gets 3% of $232, though. You're getting 9% of $18. You see, that's the difference. Now, is her stock, or is her REIT better than your REIT? Well, that means you have to look at the fundamentals. But the reason why the major difference in your yield and the actual dividend is because of the price of the stock. Yield is based on the price of the stock, whereas dividend is just how much money they're paying per share. So how many shares?
If I invested twice as much money as she invested in hers, I might approach the same kind of a quarterly
Yeah, dividend. Meaning she put a lot more money in maybe in her Essex than you put in your REIT. That's probably what happened. But that's the difference. It's a percentage. The yield is a percentage of the stock price. Dividend is just how much per share. So if the stock prices, if the two stock prices are massively different, which we have here, then it would be very different amounts of money. Mm-hmm. You know, the dividend.
Okay. Well, I was trying to, you know, that uncomplicates the matter for me because I thought I was losing out on something, and
no.
The X dividend is tomorrow, so I thought I better call you today.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Jackie. I appreciate it. Thank you for listening. I appreciate that too. Thank you. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. What's your money question? Which type of bond is the safest? Is there a good reason to buy a loaded mutual fund? 888-99-CHARTER is our live listener line every weekday from 4 to 5 Pacific time. Okay, 888-99-CHARTER is our number, 888-992-4278. So we'll try to keep you from the edge. Do you need help sorting out your financial issues of your life? I would love to talk to you. Why don't you give me a call? Let's take a look at the market. ETF versus mutual fund is going to be our main talking point. And I'm going to talk about several other things. What is the biggest worry about the economy and the stock market? What is the biggest worry right now? I always like to try to figure out what the stock market, what will affect the economy downward, because always a shrinking economy always leads to weak stock market. So what's the big worry now out there right now? I don't think we've talked about that. And did you see oil hit $50 a barrel today? What does that mean? It was back up to 50. And, you know, it's been pretty resilient. So we're going to talk about what does that mean for us, me and you, and the market and the economy. And finally, bullish investors binge on loans. Bullish investors binge on loans. And here I'm talking about margin debt. And if you don't know what that is, I'll definitely explain that first, and then we'll go into it. So what is it on your mind? What do you want to talk about first? You know, ETF versus mutual fund. Do you know what the difference is between an ETF and a mutual fund? I mean, it's not... There are striking similarities and striking differences. Okay, for instance, an ETF, whenever the market, you can buy and sell an ETF like a stock. Okay, but what is inside the ETF? Well, most of the time they're tracking some indexes or some sliver of different sectors of the market. Okay, and you can try to trade them like a stock, buy and sell them. But they both mutual funds and an ETF hold a bunch of stock, not just one. More, a group of stocks. Mutual funds, you can only buy at the end of the day after the hours. So only one time you can buy it and one time you can sell it at the end of the day. So you can't, you know, ETFs you can trade even. Mutual funds typically typically make taxable distributions. We got several more differences we'll have to talk about before the end of the hour, but I'm going to have to take a break. This is MS Talk. I'm Steve Peasley. 888-99-CHARTER is our live listener number. 4 to 5 Pacific time. Call anytime.
Hi, this is Stan from Richmond, Virginia. Will a conversion from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA satisfy my required minimum distribution? Thanks so much for your podcast. Have a great day, gentlemen.
That's a really good question. Okay, so, you know, you're at a certain age. At age 7.5, you're required to take money out of your IRA because the government wants its tax dollars. And that's what is called a required minimum distribution. Every year after 7.5, you're required to take that money out. So if I think what happens, this is what's going to happen. The answer is going to be yes, by the way. Because when you take the money out of your required minimum distribution, you're taking out the IRA, you're going to have to pay taxes on that, and then you can put that money right into a Roth. So you're not getting away with anything. You're just opening up a Roth account and moving the net after-tax amount to the Roth. So, yes, you still have to pay the required minimum distribution. You still have to take the money out of the IRA, whatever that minimum is. Okay? Now, depending, you have to check with your accountant as to how much you can put in the Roth, after age 70 and a half. I don't know the rules. I'm not that familiar with it at that point. But you're going to have to take the required minimum distribution to put the money in the Roth. So you're going to have to pay taxes on the money. Just maybe put it that way. But talk to your accountant, and it's a good question because there's probably rules that I don't know anything about. I don't want to get you in trouble, okay? We were talking about mutual funds versus ETF, and I said that, you know, an ETF you can buy and sell during the day, whereas a mutual fund you can only buy it at the and sell it at the end of the day. So that's a pretty big differentiator. Mutual funds also give you taxable distributions, usually at the very end of the year, December. So if you had capital gains in a mutual fund, they're gonna distribute that to you, and you're gonna pay taxes on it. And what's really funny is you could pay taxes on gains that you never got. So you've got to be careful about when you buy the mutual fund. ETFs are usually more tax efficient because you can buy them and hold them, and you don't have to incur a capital gains because it only happens when you sell it at a profit. Many mutual funds allow you to put regular investments, regular on a timely basis from your bank account. ETFs you have to buy in open market. Many new mutual funds don't charge a fee to buy or sell. Mutual funds, you know, you have a trading cost usually. I'm sorry, ETFs you usually have a trading cost. Mutual funds, no, there's not. Those are some of the major differences. Now, the basic difference is mutual funds can be managed by somebody. And most of them are managed, but you do have mutual fund index funds. But there's a lot of mutual funds that are managed, whereas ETFs so far, even though they're just starting to come out with managed ETFs, are not really managed. They are just tracking stocks or an index or a sub-index or a sector, and there's really no one managing it, usually, majority of the time. There's your differences. Nothing more, nothing less than that. So there's nothing fancy about that. Okay, 888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Thomas in Newark. How you doing, Thomas?
Hey, fine. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Of course. Hey, I heard the question regarding the required minimum distribution and if it can, or if a Roth conversion can count towards that.
Yes.
I've been working with IRAs for a long time, and I can tell you that, no, unfortunately, your Roth conversion could not count towards the RMD. Have to take your RMD separately.
That's what I thought.
Just wanted to let you know.
Well, I appreciate the call. I was thinking of that as I gave it a few seconds of thought. Yeah. You're going to have to pay taxes. The government wants its money. Yes. That's about it.
Yes.
Thanks, Thomas. I really appreciate the call. Thank you
very much.
Absolutely.
Love your show. Thank you.
Okay, so there's the answer from seemed like a well-informed listener. So, yeah, you're going to have, I don't think you can get away without paying tax. The government wants its money. Coming to terms with investing. Here's an investing term you should understand. What is beta? B-E-T-A. Beta. Beta is a measurement of volatility or systematic risk of a security or portfolio in comparison to the market as a whole, usually the S&P 500. So the S&P 500 has a beta of 1. Your stock has a beta of 1.3. That means it's 30% more volatile, up or down. If you have a beta of 0.7, that means 30% less volatile, up or down. Much more calm position. That's what beta is. Beta. A good term to know. Because if you want to reduce the beta of your portfolio, you buy stocks that are not very volatile, that are much less volatile, and you can identify them by their beta. Kind of fun, huh? If you want stocks that are much more volatile, why would you want that? Let's say you're in a roaring bull market. Hey, you want them more volatile, don't you? You want them to be higher in beta. You want to get as much return as you can. We're at the halfway mark, everybody, this Thursday, Invest Talk. I appreciate you listening. Right now, let's hear your money question, if you have one, 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk continues next. A couple words for KPP Financial. Managing your money is more than just investing, of course, picking stocks and funds. Our money lives are much bigger than that, so KPP Financial offers their clients help answering all of life's money questions. They can help with a broad range of aspects, not just your investments, taxes, real estate. They don't collect commissions, so they don't have biases toward particular investments. So when you're looking for answers, the staff at KPP Financial is there for you. And they're very accessible, very diligent about getting back to you, returning their calls. KPP Financial, serving the average investor, helping them find solutions for more than 20 years. And now let's continue with the podcast. Invest Talk continues on. Next time, the level of complexity is more than most investors have the time, desire, or technology to dig into. Are hedge funds for the average investor? Could they be? That's one of our topics next time on Invest Talk. You set the topic right now. Call us at 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. And we're going to go talk to Oscar in San Jose. How you doing, Oscar?
Hi, Steve. I'm doing great. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I had a question. I was wondering if you'd give me a quick lesson on options. My wife works for a company, and they issue her options at a 80% discount.
Wow.
And we've had options for quite some time, and I was wondering, what are the tax implications when you sell the option without exercising it, and or when you exercise it, how long do you have to wait for maturity before you sell it, et cetera?
Okay, so when you exercise the option, in other words, she's given you an option and you exercise it, so you now purchased the position, the stock of the company, right? So you now purchased it. Now you had to have income. Think of it this way. You had to have income to purchase it, didn't you?
Yeah.
Right? If you're going to go out in the market and buy that stock, you'd have to buy it with cash. You'd have to have some money. So the money that you, that the time that you exercise that option, whatever price you exercise it at, that is going to be income to you that you're going to have to pay income tax on. Okay? So you need to sell some of those stocks to prepare yourself to pay income tax. I've had people exercise a stock at, let's say, and I don't remember the numbers, but just in general, they exercise their option at $50 a share, and the stock goes down to $10 a share, and then they have to pay taxes on the $50 income tax, even though they don't have it. So make sure when you exercise those options, the smart thing is talk to an accountant, but the smart thing is to sell enough right away to pay the taxes when they come due. Because you don't know if the stock is going to go up or down. You have no idea. But you're going to have to pay taxes once you've exercised the options. Income taxes.
So once I exercise the option and I purchase it, could I sell it right away?
Yes.
Or do I have to wait a certain amount of time?
No. Once you've exercised it, you own the stock, you can do what you want.
Okay.
There might be rules. Oscar, there's going to be rules on when you can exercise your option, though, right? The company may give you options. Say you can't exercise. You got to work here a year before we give you options, but they don't vest, I guess they would call it, till a year later. So you can't exercise it. But once you've exercised it, you have control.
I believe I had a scenario once where I sold the option directly without exercising. Is that possible, or does it have to exercise before I sell it?
Actually, I think you can do that because the option itself has a value, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, now you're getting into stuff that you're getting beyond my knowledge base. But I think you can do that, yes. Oscar, you really need to talk to an accountant so that you guys don't get in trouble by tax time. You know, I don't know if you did it this year or last year, but if you did this year, you got to April 15th next year. If you did it last year, you got, you know, April 15th is coming up.
All righty.
Good luck.
Thank you for the information.
Thanks, Oscar. Yeah, and, you know, I'm hoping I'm giving all the right information. It's not my area of expertise. Anyways, 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. You know, I mentioned about the phases of emotions that people go through, and we got to the most bullish phase called euphoria, and trying to identify euphoria. One of the ways is that, well, when everybody is out of money to invest, you should be at euphoria. But you're forgetting the little part about you can go on margin. Going on margin means you own a bunch of stocks, you're fully invested, but the stocks all have value, and the custodian that you're working with will be happy to lend you money using your stocks as collateral. And that means going on margin. That's how that's defined as going on margin. Okay, we are at record margin amounts. Okay, we have $528 billion on margin for February, by the way. February. Okay, this is the highest it's ever been. But is it really, really high? If you consider it as a percentage of the market cap value of the stock market, it's not at a high. Okay? So it is at a high pure dollar sense, but it's not at a brand new high based on the value of the underlying stocks, because those stocks have gone up, the indexes are much higher. Therefore, you know, as a percentage of that, $528 billion of that is a certain percent, and that certain percent has been higher in the past. So the pure dollars is highest, but not as a percentage of the overall market being on margin. Now, always, always, always in the past, a new high on margin, which we really are, a new high on margin has always led to a correction or a bear market. Does that scare you? Well, of course it probably does. But always, always, always in the past, there's no rhyme or reason as to exactly when the market will start to fall. Don't know that. We don't have a clue. So we could stay high for months and months and year, I don't know, I can't tell you. But we do know, so are we at euphoria? And my gut feeling is that we're not at euphoria. We're not. But this is another little nail in the coffin to tell you that we're awful high. We're awful rich. And you've heard me talk about the other nails I've been talking about. You know, the P.E. ratio is pretty high. The Shiller P.E. is very high. Different ways to look at it, pretty high. But are we at euphoria? Euphoria means that everybody just so happy and buy every stock in the world, and everybody thinks they're geniuses in the market because they're all making money. And that, I just don't feel it yet. Might be, but I don't feel it. Let's get back to our 24-hour listener line and pick up another question. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hello, Steve and Justin. This is Cole from Michigan. I have a question for you. I held a group of core stocks in my retirement fund for 2.5 years, and Disney was one of them. Recently, I took profit on my core holdings as well as some of the other growth ones. However, Disney had not done much for about 2.5 years other than pay the dividend. I no longer consider Disney as part of my core anymore, and looking at replacing it perhaps, you know, with a Microsoft or a larger, you know, a big blue chip. I was wondering if you still would consider Disney as a core, considering some of the things that they're looking at with ESPN and so forth. Interested in your answer? I'll listen on the podcast. Thanks.
Yeah, as a definition of a core holding, Disney would meet most of the definition of core holding. It's a big blue chip, $179 billion. That's not only big, that's mega cap. It is growing its earnings. It has grown its earnings year after year after year after year. Sales has tailed off a little bit, but, you know, if they make a big blockbuster movie, it changes. They're not very much in debt, and they have a really good return on equity. So they have all the numbers. They're a little bit pricey. Disney is a little bit pricey versus its PE ratio. But as a core holding, yes, it's still a core holding. Core holdings are those things you just hold forever and you really just don't pay attention to them. And Disney fits that bill. Okay, it doesn't mean you can't sell it. It doesn't mean you can't buy some other core holding. But it's not the type of stock that you trade in or you don't hold for 5-10 years. I would. I'd hold it for years and years as a core holding. Disney DIS is a symbol, everybody. It's right near its 52-week high. It may have made the 52-week high today. Let's see. Yeah. 0.1% off its 52-week high. So it's really right at the 52-week high. It's had a nice run since the election, presidential election. How much risk is in your retirement portfolio right now? Risk is essential to growing a portfolio. You've got to take some risk. But how much is too much for you? Now, you can take our free risk analysis quiz. It's not very long. It gives you a score from 0 to 99 or 0 to 100, 100 being high, high risk. The S&P is, has a risk of about 80. So how much risk are you willing to take? And these questions kind of guide you through that risk score. You can take it free. Right on our website at investtalk.com. Just click on the Invest Talk tab.
Looking at the calendar, Steve has some new dates for checkups in Northern California. Each month, he sets aside these one-hour blocks of time to review retirement portfolios. He'll be in San Jose next week, April 5th, and then San Ramon, April 25th. And of course, no matter where you live, you can take advantage of these checkups on Skype and telephone too. Just go to investtalk.com to start the process and look for the Invest Talk tab and then Portfolio Review.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So what is the biggest worry about the economy right now? You know, are we worrying about Russia or China? Are we worried about the European Union or the Brexit or the ECB doing something or Japan? Are we worried about Japan? What's a war? Are we going to go into another Middle East war? You know, it's hard to put your finger on, isn't it? How about Brazil? Are we worried about them falling deeper in recession? I don't see a big worries about any of those. So what's my biggest worry? What do I think is a big worry? I think my big worry is the consumer. My biggest worry is consumer spending. And tomorrow we're going to have another consumer spending report out. We come out once a month. Remember, our economy is, 66 to 70% consumer spending. That's what drives. So what will hurt that consumer? What will make the consumer stop spending? And a couple of things coming out of Washington could be a problem. Like a trade war, you know, that could Trump cause trade war? That means that would that scare the consumer and have him stop spending? My focus is always on the consumer, really. Do you want to know the truth? How about changing Obamacare? Not that the change would scare the consumer that much, but maybe the change, would that cause more costs coming out of elderly people's pockets? Would that cause consumers to stop spending? How about take the other side? If his tax cuts come in, won't that put more money in the consumer's pocket and therefore the economy will grow faster? And therefore, we shouldn't worry about it too much. So, or how about the Federal Reserve increasing interest rates? Will the consumer react to that negatively? Well, they probably will on housing at some point. So far, we haven't seen any evidence of it, but I've seen anecdotal evidence that looks like the housing is starting to top and starting to calm down. Focus on the consumer, everybody. That poor consumer is the guy or gal who keeps this economy rolling. And if that person is spending, then everything else falls into place. Now, the consumer is not the only one that drives the stock market. It's just the far most important thing that drives the stock market. So pay attention to the consumer. As I said, the consumer spending comes out tomorrow. We've had consumer confidence report out, was it Monday or Tuesday? And tomorrow we have consumer sentiment, and they are pretty high. I worry about looking at those things. I worry I don't pay a lot of attention to those monthly reports, and those monthly reports are pretty much the most recent reports. I mean, talking about this month, March. And it just tells you what the consumer's feeling the day they take it. And if they take that survey right after something happens, their confidence is low. It's hard to relate what their confidence to their spending patterns. And the spending pattern is the most important thing, not what they feel like today. Now, in general, consumers are pretty upbeat right now. So in general, you could say, you know, it's going to do well. Okay. Do we have time to pick up Gene in North Carolina? Hi, Gene. How you doing?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Steve.
Thank you.
Yeah, you were just talking about Disney. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, every time Disney comes out with a movie, whether it's their own characters or the Marvel characters, right, or Star Wars, you know, all this merchandise hits the local retail markets, and
yep,
including toys. And they have to, right now, Disney has to get a license to get a toy maker like Mattel or Hasbro to make these toys. I'm wondering, does it make sense in the long run for Disney to actually buy one of these toy companies?
Well, you know, that might make sense for them, because they do have as you pointed out, they do have a built-in channel of toys through their movies, and right, I don't think that's going to stop. Look at Star Wars. I mean, look how many decades that's been. They've been selling those, and I don't think that's going to end.
And all the Marvel characters, all the Spider-Man, yeah, Avengers,
on the other hand,
and so on.
On the other hand, maybe they're making a ton of money, and they probably are, just by licensing. Maybe they don't want to get into a whole business, just charge people lots of money to use those characters. Gene, it's a good question. If they have a lot of extra money, that's a way they could go and spend it and try to expand their business model. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Yeah. You're listening to Invest Talk. We still can fit you in the last quarter part of the show. Give us a call right now, 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278. Let's talk to Blaine in Santa Clara. How you doing, Blaine?
Hey, great. Hey, thanks for putting the show on every day.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks for the nice words.
Hey, it's great. Great job. Hey, question. With the innovation, the incredible innovation, disruptive innovation in tech, mm-hmm, in biotech, right, in AI, the insane, I think a lot of people don't understand. I mean, I work down here and I still don't quite comprehend the enormity of the change that's coming. Yeah. I think most of the country has no idea what's coming.
I agree.
And there's going to be, an insane job shift,
yep,
with robotics, AI, biotech is changing the entire landscape of babies and how we age and everything else. What are you looking at right now, besides some of these overvalued companies out there, if any, that you would consider investing in, that are kind of in, at the beginning maybe of this this push forward?
Well, you know, if we're talking about, you know, we're talking about artificial intelligence and how that's going to change the world, everybody, and I agree with you. I don't think anybody's, Blaine, is even halfway prepared. Jobs are going to be destroyed in the millions. But the problem with that is there are going to be millions of other jobs created. You know, it's just what side are you going to be on? You could have said that about the Industrial Revolution. You know, who's going to replace the buggy whip makers and the wooden wheel makers? Who's going to replace all those guys, you know, and those jobs? Anyways, I'm not really worried about that part. And if you're asking me what I think the future is going to be, it's going to be massively different. And that's, have you ever read the book Creative Destruction? You ever heard of that, Blaine?
No.
Creative Destruction is about this process where jobs, industries are being destroyed and other industries being created. And you have to be, if you're thinking about the future, you have to be in the medical field. You have to be in robotic field. You have to be in artificial intelligence in any way. Everything's going to move to the cloud. Nothing. It's going to be massive. And to be honest, Blaine, I'm not smart enough to know exactly who's going to be the winners out there. I'm not smart enough to know that. I'm not. I wish I did, because if I did, I'd buy all those things and just, you know, buy them for all my clients and we'd be fat, dumb, and happy. But I don't know. I try to figure that out. One thing that was really good, my partner, who, you know, who's no longer active in the business because he's 90 years old, Jerry figured out cell phones were the future in the 90s, okay? Uh-huh. He bought Qualcomm. He bought all these stocks no one ever heard of. Made a fortune on that stuff. Okay, and we did really well. He did really well in the 1990s, buying that kind of stuff. Then he also recognized the .com boom was going to crash hard because none of these companies had any way to make money. So you can see in the stock market, yeah, the .com boom was a paradigm change that massively changed how things are done. And look at Amazon and retail. It was massive. But Look how many companies went out of business. Tons of them. Even .coms, even those in that business. So that's why I just don't know who's going to be the winners, Blaine.
Understood.
Appreciate the call. You. Very good thought, though. Thank you. Okay, you know oil's at $50 a barrel, right? Went back to $50 a barrel today. Why? Today, well, there was a bigger than expected drawdown on supplies. But we got still tons of oversupply of oil. We still do. And I don't see how that's going to change anytime soon. I just don't. If it stays at $50 a barrel, that means all that supply in the shale formations is coming right back on. And there, those companies, OPEC was hoping to drive those companies out of business. Well, they didn't succeed by trying to get prices low enough so that they couldn't afford to pump that oil, more expensive oil. Well, what happened is all those shell oil companies figured out how to pump more oil at less cost, and most of them survived. There was a number of them, a bunch of them that didn't, but most of them survived. And at $50 a barrel, they're making money at that point. At this point, before it was between $70 and $90 a barrel, they had to be making. Yeah, they needed that price point. Now, not anymore. So that means more supply come on. That means we'll never have a shortage in the foreseeable future. Our time is up for the hour, everybody. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. You can reach me directly with a question or comment. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the Contact Steve button. I will get back to you. On behalf of Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for being with us today, and let's plan on doing it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.